Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of the Pacific Novel Project, the podcast where we edit stuff. We being me, Jason, and on the other end of the line, Steve.
Hello.
How are you doing tonight, Steve?
I'm melancholy.
Melancholy.
Or indifferent.
Or indifferent.
Yeah.
Can you be melancholy and indifferent? I think we got to look at those words and see if that's possible.
I think we should. I'll get on that.
get on it right now. No, don't do it right now. We got stuff to do. So in this podcast, we edit our stories. Steve's novel is called Hollywood Dreams. It's a noir. It takes place shortly before World War II when the murder of a young girl back in the days when Nazis were openly walking up and down the streets of America, and some Americans thought, hey, maybe we should fight for Germany. And I am writing I'm going to call it a Western steampunk, even though I'm not sure what the hell it is, and it's called The Ghost of Silver Creek. And we are on our second drafts, so if you want to see any of our earlier stuff, head on over to patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project and check out what we got. We got a book club, we've got editing discussions, we have workshops, we have possibility of getting free books, we have writing prompts, we have 200 word short story, not called a contest yet. I want to call the contest, but we need more people to be active in it. I'm out of town. I'm in Denver talking to Steve via the miracle of the internet. So some of the stuff for the last few weeks, it may be like, oh, not much is going on. Stuff is always going on. It's just my trip, which has been like a month long, is just slowing some of that down. But when I get back, it'll pick right back up. So,
and what a long, strange trip it's been.
Yeah, it is. Some dude sitting next to me at the bus stop smoking pot today.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just, I'm not anti-pot. I feel the same way I feel about cigarettes. It smells disgusting. Yeah, I don't fucking want to smell you. This guy looked like he was having a rough life, so I just tried to stay downwind as much as possible.
Just said, smell you later, and got off the bus?
Yeah, no, I was at the bus stop. I wasn't actually on the bus.
Oh, okay.
Because you're not supposed to smoke it in public. Anyway, so speaking of smoking, how's your quitting smoking doing?
That's how it's doing.
Negative.
Negative ghostwriter.
Oh man. Oh, you're doing, you had such a good stretch.
I did. I'm gonna try for another stretch here soon when I'm not feeling so
melancholy.
Yes. That melancholy.
So I'd offer to like bug you about it, but anytime anybody's ever asked me to keep them on straight and narrow, they get grumpy ass. So I just offer my moral support now.
Hey, moral support's good. I'll take it.
Yeah, well, I know your roommate went through the same thing, so might be a good guy to lean on.
You know, he wants me to, and to a certain point I want to, but right now, just, I don't know. I like making excuses for right now.
There you got it. Steve is melancholy and trying to quit smoking, and I am bored in Denver.
Did you ever see what's that actor's name? He was in The Untouchables.
Andy Garcia.
Yes. Things to do in Denver when you're dead. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
That was actually, it wasn't too bad. When you said that, I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, Denver is actually a nice town. I'm just kind of limited when I'm here because I don't have like a car or anything, and you know I can't afford to Uber fucking everywhere or Uber to the Great Divide or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Hey. So I guess you're kind of like, I guess for you, it's kind of like being trapped on an island.
Yeah. Except I'm trapped in a very nice hotel.
Well, hey, you know, you gotta have your sugar or your carrot, you know?
Yeah. Hey, and you're paying for this. So, hey, thanks. Thanks, taxpayer.
Oh, you damn freeloader.
I know. Taking all that government money like a fucking socialist.
Hey, there's plenty of capitalists that take government money.
Oh, ain't that the truth? Motherfuckers. All right. Well, we sidebarred that. Let's get on with the editing. Usually we do our sidebars in the middle of the show.
Hey, there's no set place for a sidebar, but you know, sometimes we got to find our way back to the main bar though.
Yeah, it's true. Especially if you're new listening, you're like, what the fuck are these guys talking about?
And sometimes you need somebody to show you the way to the next whiskey bar.
Yeah. Hey, so let's head to Lou's, but I guess there is no Lou's. This is the first time I've read anything in a long time. It don't happen in Lou's.
I know, right?
All right. So what are we reading? We're reading Hollywood Dreams. I'm going to go first. The last we left off are two main cops. Detective Elijah Tomb, he's the main character. It's first person from his perspective. And his partner, Montgomery. Name I can't. What's his last name?
Monty? Weston.
Yeah. Monty Weston. There we go. Like the dude from Burn Notice.
I don't think I ever watched that show. Or if I did, I only saw a couple episodes.
You know, it's kind of silly. Pretty unrealistic. I think he tried to do things that would get him shot in the face like 1,000 times in real life. But I like the characters. I like the humor. I like the actors. It was an entertaining movie. It was an entertaining show to watch.
Did it have Bruce Campbell?
It does have Bruce Campbell. That's all you need to know.
Cool. The chin to rule them all.
Yeah. Bruce Campbell is a ex-Navy SEAL and now currently alcoholic grifter.
I like him already.
Yeah, his character's funny. All right. So, Monty and Elijah were at the Edgewater Hotel, which is the place where they found Nancy Kaminsky's body on the beach. They're looking for some clues, and they find at one dude's place that they were investigating, a guy who was later murdered, they had found a room number for this hotel, so they went to go check out the room, found some Nazi literature in it, and that was pretty much all they found, and now they're leaving. So this opening paragraph, they're sitting in Monty's car, sitting in Monty's blue Plymouth curbside in front of the Edgewater. I can't shake the feeling of eyes being on us and scrutinizing our every move. I just suggested some edits here. I think we know Monty's car is a blue Plymouth by now. It gets mentioned quite a bit, so I just put car.
All right.
And then I deleted curbside because most cars, when they're parked, are curbside. It was combined with this sentence, the eyes being honest and scrutinizing. It just made it a long sentence. So I suggested deleting a few of those words. So it says, sitting in Monty's car in front of the Edgewater, I can't shake the feeling our every move is being scrutinized. Monty gets in the car. They drive away. I suggested that he pulls into traffic instead of pulling away from the curb into traffic, because when you pull into traffic, you're... Oh, actually, I accidentally deleted the word into there, lined out that out. That's an accent. That should still be there. So they begin to drive away. Monty's like, what the hell are we doing? And Tim was like, what do you mean? There's an address on this pamphlet. Let's go check it out. He thinks they're being followed, but Tim's like, yeah, I don't see anybody. Because they've had some run-ins with some fancy cars. And so from my point of view, the reader, I think he was looking for fancy cars. And Monty flies through this red light, and his old beat-up green Ford follows him. Was this a Ford truck? Did we ever say what type of car this was?
No, just a green Ford.
Okay, just green Ford. Yeah, that's cool. So this green Ford is following him, and it's a little older, and he comes up, and he rams the back of Monty's car. Monty's a little pissed. And I actually didn't have a lot to say on this page. I can't. I'm looking at my iPad and it doesn't really show the page numbers. So normally I give the page numbers. I apologize. It's kind of difficult to follow along when you can't see the pages.
It's all good. Handheld devices, they usually don't show the page numbers unless you like put it in a certain setting. So no worries, man.
But hey, if you want to follow along, go to patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project and check out our posts, because we got copies of our manuscripts there and you can follow along. All right. So the only comment, I just kind of made funny comments really on here. Like, Tomb says, Monty's all pissed, and Tomb says, come on, let's trading a little paint. And I thought, well, because Tomb's got that old crappy car, and I was like, well, that's easy for him to say. And then I laughed because the next line was like, we're not in your jalopy, Tomb, Monty says. So they have a little fender bender, and Tomb leans out the window and starts shooting at him, puts a couple holes in the hood of the car and the engine, and the guy peels off. So in this page, I highlighted this part. They won't get far with a busted radiator. Actually, let me back up. Monty tells him he had a good shot. Tomb's like, yeah, good enough. They're still behind us. And Monty says, they just turned off, and I'll be damned if we're going to lose them. So I was a little my comment didn't really show up there. I don't know why. I was a little confused because when he said we're going to lose them, they're being chased. So at first I thought he meant, oh, we need to lose them. But as I read this next paragraph, they won't get far with that busted radiator. I was like, oh, wait, he means be damned if we're going to lose them because now we're chasing them. So I just think that paragraph needs, next time you go through it, just make it more clear, add something that shows that the chasee is now the chaser.
Okay, let me make that a little more clear.
So they go down, they follow him down the road. They turn around somehow and get down that road that he goes down. They find him parked in the alley. They found the car. Car is empty. The car keys are still in it. Monty looks in the dumpster. I assume he was just checking to see if the guy was hiding in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of gross. They search the car. They find, like, boxes of these pamphlets in there. And then, oh, this part was funny. So they hear some, like, noise behind them. And there's a guy in a suit. And he's trying to look all cool. You know, he's near the mouth of the alley. He's trying to look cool, like he just happened to pass him by. And Tomb is, I can't read my comments here. Tomb is like, hey, excuse me, please, while I ask you a question. And then the stranger little walks a little faster. Tomb walks a little faster. And then Monty runs past me, sprinting towards a stranger. And I just commented, Monty, don't fuck around.
No, we don't.
Monty's had enough of that shit. He just... So I love that he doesn't care. He just sprints after this dude and tackles him. And man, both of them rough him up. That's the first time I've seen Monty get rough with somebody.
You know, hey, it's the bumper, man.
So he roughs the guy up as they put him in the squad car. You know, the guy at first professes that, you know, hey, I'm not doing nothing. But then after they, I'm going to use the word interrogate with their air quotes, he starts mouthing off to them, you know, saying, hey, shit's come down on you assholes, you asshole cops. And they take him back to police station. So Wilcox Avenue Police Station is the title in this section. Monty is waiting outside of the interrogation room. The man's ID, his name was Walter Hyde. They're trying to check out to see if he owns the plate and owns the car by checking the plates, which is not as smooth and easy as it is these days. And they start interrogating him, and they basically tell him, hey, were you returning to the scene of the crime? You kill that woman? You're going to go down for killing that woman? He says he wants a phone call. Tomb says, bad news, the phones are down. It's pretty funny. I picture all this. I picture everything that's happening in black and white.
Right?
And let's see, I had a comment here. Let's see if it'll pop up. Oh, I can't read it. Maybe you can read it to me. Maybe you see it.
What's that?
Okay, here we go. My freaking comments on this section. We know that the green Ford is yours, Mr. Hyde. So the flyers are yours as well. I would like to... Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, the transition. The transition from Monty saying, you the one slipping these flyers into the Bibles at the Edgewater? And then Tomb says, we know that the Ford is yours, Mr. Hyde. I think in between those, I'd like some response from Mr. Hyde.
Okay.
He could say no. He could just shake his head. I think it'd make more sense with the Tomb coming at him then, because he doesn't even give the dude a chance to answer the question.
All right.
And I believe the rest of that part that's highlighted, Tomb says, we know the Ford is yours and the flyers. Are you a fan of timepieces, Hyde? I ask and light my cigarette. Walter shifts in his chair. I don't care anyone know. Well, seeing that you have a line in this Nazi stuff, maybe you could tell us who is. Because one of the clues that they found was this broken fob of a Nazi watch. The Nazi war eagle on it. So I like that transition. I thought that was a smooth transition between Monty and Tomb and going from the evidence they have to the watch.
Awesome.
Further down toward the bottom, I didn't kill anyone, Hyde protests, his eyes wide and brow scrunched. We think you did. We're open to other suggestions, though, I say. And cruise out my cigarette. I had to look up that word, C-R-U-S.
Oh, I meant it to be crush. It was supposed to be crush, but if cruise works, I'll keep it.
Well, it kind of doesn't. So, do you know what it means? I get it.
Tell me.
Cruise means like an oblong object.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
So, I thought he was taking out another cigarette.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, it's supposed to be crush out. Crush the life out of it.
All right. Man, he just lit that thing, though.
Been a little bit.
He just had a cigarette. Why is he getting another cigarette? But he's crushing out that cigarette.
Well, they were cheap back then.
Yeah. They're toasted. That's a Mad Men reference.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
It's the only Mad Men reference I got. Mad Men reference I have, because I only watched the first season.
Fair enough. You watched more than I have.
Yeah, I get why people like that show, but it wasn't for me because everybody was a scumbag and I couldn't root for anybody.
Yeah, I get that.
But there's this scene where these new federal regulations are coming out where they have to, you know, put stuff on the package about them killing you. They're killing you, Steve.
Hey, no one gets out alive, dude.
Everything comes full circle. So they're having a meeting with the cigarette execs, and the cigarette execs are freaking out. And the main guy, Draper, I can't remember his actor's name, but he's in a lot of stuff. He's a good actor. He's like, well, just tell me what you do with these things, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, first, what does that have to do with anything? Well, first we do this, and then we do that, and then we roast them in this thing. We toast them in this thing to do. He's like, boom, that's it. Such and such cigarettes. They're toasted.
They're toasted. Oh, God.
Nothing else is going to matter.
Yeah, lawyers and marketers, man, you know, they pretty much sell you lock, stock, and barrel.
And, that's pretty much the end of that. We both actually have pretty short entries into this week's podcast.
Yes, we do.
All right. But that was good overall. I think this part, I didn't write a wrap-up. I kind of like this because in the previous draft, they found Nancy, and then they're being kind of chased around. And this part actually feels more natural. You know, they're still not Nancy. Nancy's dead. They're trying to find the sister. They know there's a sister out there that they're looking for, who they believe is alive and want to find, you know, for clues and to protect. So it's like, hey, we're getting closer to the sister. Or even if they're not getting closer to the sister, close to the sister, pressure people also looking for the sister, people not wanting them to find the sister before they do. I feel like that pressure coming before they find the sister is more like intense, more palpable than when it was after they found the sister.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, honestly, that was one problem I kind of noticed I was having was they find her and then like they just hide her away for the rest of the book. And it's like, okay, that didn't work. Totally didn't work.
I think it was fine. Yeah, I wouldn't say it totally didn't work. I would just say it needed a little bit more. And I think what you've got going on in this draft so far is that little bit more.
All right, cool. I'll take it and I'll run with it and see where it goes. Yeah, so I'm not sure when they're gonna finally meet her, but you know, I'll figure it out. and then we'll figure it out, and then I'll figure it out, then we'll figure it out, then I'll figure it out, then we'll figure it out.
There's a lot of figuring.
Okay, so the Ghost of Silver Creek, last we left off on page 139, Joshua and Caroline meet up at Joshua's hotel room, and they have an evening together. And
what are you, a Puritan?
Well, okay, they fuck.
This podcast is marked as explicit.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, all right. So Caroline comes by Joshua's room, and they exchange some witty banter, and then Chalk comes by, and Joshua kind of tells him to get lost, and him and Caroline get down to the fucking, and they.
I would have also accepted do it.
Oh, do it or coitus or
knock
or shag. Oh boy. So see the bottom of 139. Caroline leaves Joshua early in the morning, and he gets a couple hours of sleep. So I'd probably call that a few winks, I guess. And there's a sentence here I really like. The imagery it conjures is the skeletons of the dead trailed Joshua like the wake of a steamboat. Yeah, I liked the imagery that conjures it. Just dead bodies behind a steamboat, or skeletons. Either way, it's dead bodies. But yeah, it makes me wonder just how many people Joshua Stone has killed since he started brandishing an iron. A few. Just a few. Just enough for a wake of skeletons behind a steamboat.
Goblins don't count.
Oh, poor goblins. To say that they don't count. How rude. Seriously. But okay, that was top 140. And so Joshua resumes his trying to get a hold of Chalk. He goes down for breakfast and ruminates on third-party possibilities and his part to play in it. So, and the third party comes from his instinct told him he had involved himself in more than just a land war. The alleged attacks on the Brodies by the Lesser Arm Nesters, the Dark Rider, there were third-party interests here. What their purpose was, Joshua had no care for. He was hired to perform a job. Who he had to go through to complete it was of no consequence, but what he did not want were surprises. So I like that he's turning some wheels on this Dark Rider and a possible third party trying to join the fun. So I thought that was a good, it's a good thing to have him kind of contemplating that at this point. So Joshua pays the man for his food, goes out, and he finds Chalk, and he's kind of giving Chalk shit about being Billy Butthurt, about Joshua ignoring him while he was getting his bang on. And kind of we get a little bit of into Chalk here at the bottom of 140. With experimental programming had been too successful, sometimes he needed to be coaxed, shown some appreciation. So basically Chalk has feelings, and they can be crushed and hurt.
Yes.
And obliterated. So Chalk can be melancholy.
He could be melancholy.
Now we're on to 141. And I do like the banter between Chalk and Joshua. I say it all the time, but I do. And one thing that I'm wondering about is Chalk's dialogue is usually in italics, isn't it?
I italicized that shit. I don't know why it's not italicized here now.
Oh, okay. Fair enough then. And then this is where Joshua gets the news that there's another circle and a body west of the Brody Ranch. So Chalk's going to take him to go check it out. So 142, we're coming into this this conversation between Joshua and Chalk talking about corroborated reports of real horses and sightings of firsthand sightings or reports of having seen a real horse and when the last time was.
Ooh, I didn't put that in there. That'd be a good idea.
The last time. Oh, being the last time?
Yeah, like when was the last sighting? And that'd be funny. That'd be funny if you said 2 days ago.
I know, right? That would be funny.
And then Josh would be like, look, Dick.
I know, right? Don't be a smartass. So basically, they end up with just like 11,112 corroborated reports of like firsthand reports of these things. And I liked this line to whittle it down even more was, how many of those reports didn't involve alcohol? Well, pre-temperance movement, not many. Ended up at 425, which, yeah, that got whittled down quite a bit.
Yeah, from like 100,000 something.
Yeah, yeah. It was like 11,112 was the last amount, and it gets whittled down to 425. But what I really like is that Chalk can just like keep and access databases and cross-reference them on the fly. So he's more computer than just a steam horse. And I think that's definitely a plus for his character. I mean, because he's almost an artificial intelligence. I mean, really, because he has emotions. He's basically like Data with the emotion chip, but as a horse.
Yeah.
And I like it. but I dig Trek, so, you know, there you have it. A little further down, 142, I cut the second part of a sentence that was that followed Scan the Trail, and it was his eyes moving back and forth slowly over the terrain. I kind of thought Scan the Trail already did that work, so I cut that out. I felt extraneous. So we're moving on to the next page, 143.
Extraneous is how you make that nano word count.
True.
Words. I need words.
Just attack that shit James Fenimore Cooper style. Oh, man. Okay. Let's see here.
Who else likes words? Freaking Shirley Jackson.
Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, God. Oh, God. When she was writing the psychologist, Dr. Wright.
Yeah.
His writings. God, that just... I wanted to just, like, not pick up the book again. Huh. Well, it started to feel like I was reading a textbook. Yeah. And I was like, this is really dry.
That book being The Bird's Nest, which we're doing a podcast on. Go to patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. Check it out.
Do it now! You know you want to. Unless your other personality's telling you not to. And then just tell your other personality to shut up. So on 143, we're talking, Chalk and Joshua were Joshua's reminiscing on having a mechanical horse and the dangers of therein, of having a horse that can kind of take over or be a partner instead of just a vehicle, and how, you know, it kind of makes Joshua distracted at times or makes it to where he doesn't have to always be on point, and how that makes him susceptible. Out of all this, there was one thing. It was, let's see, bottom of 142, just happened to be in the wrong place at the right time for some poor bandit to make the mistake of catching him unawares. One almost succeeded. And then it goes on to another time. Is this another time, the one where somebody almost succeeded? I don't think it is, though, because it's talking about Chalk kind of taking over which job they ended up taking.
Oh, yeah, when he fell asleep in the saddle.
Yeah, and Chalk said, we're going to go do this job. Yeah, so woke up like half a day's ride.
That's part of the story was inspired by a girl I used to date who was a truck driver, and she had a partner, and they took turns sleeping and driving.
Okay.
And I don't forget, they were supposed to go somewhere north, and she went back in the bed to take a nap, and when she woke up, she was in Louisiana or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Because her partner decided she quit and just drove home.
That's great. I love that. That's a good story. Okay. But I also want to know about the one that almost succeeded in taking Joshua out. That's kind of a bomb to drop and then just move on. I don't know. I was like, it's like, who almost succeeded? I mean, maybe it's irrelevant, but I found myself wondering.
Sure.
But I mean, it's not a big deal. It's just one of those things where I was like, I kind of want to know what happened there. little further down, 143. I cut a streams and put erosion in because repetition. And then a little bit further down, I did like some of the descriptions here when they're in the canyon, like the trees that are in this canyon. White barked birch mixed with aspens and greasewood hug the wall of the canyon, flourishing in the nutrient rich deposits left by the river. I liked that. It was good. And like kind of the water and the leaves rustling and all that kind of being hypnotic. I thought there was some good descriptors and kind of some sensory kind of going on there too, which was good. And this is where they find the circle. And it's a different circle. I mean, it's a lot the same, but there's some differences in some of the lines. And then Joshua goes up and smudges the pattern. What the hell? And then, yeah, just being that this beach is grass and sand, or grass and then sand, a lot of what evidence there was is kind of not there anymore. And this is where this is when Joshua gets to see the body, and the body is just totally burnt beyond all recognition. And then I changed a body out for corpse for repetition. All right, 145. Joshua kind of chalks it up as adding the body to Teague's to-do list, which I think that was a good call on his part because, you know, Teague's going to know who to track down to identify this body, or at least identify a gender. And this is where Joshua finds the George MacDonald book, The Princess and the Goblin, which we did a podcast on. If you're interested, hop on Patreon, check it out. It was actually a pretty fun podcast, too. We had several sidebars, I think, during that one.
Yeah, George was an interesting guy, and that was a story that did not go down the way I expected it was going to go down.
Yeah, me neither. Totally. Yeah, I was a little surprised by that one myself, but I liked the excerpt used from the book, which is, Curdy is not yet able to believe some things. Seeing is not believing. It is only seeing. And actually, like, remember where that was in the book. When I read it, I was like, oh, okay. I know something now. So Joshua keeps the book, puts it in a saddlebag, and decides to head for town. And since it's Saturday, all the other ranchers will be heading into town. And he's hoping the nesters stay home. And we're out of words. We're out of words.
Oh, no.
Do you have any questions for me?
I do not have any questions. I'm kind of curious how, because my first draft, I think, was a little over 300 pages.
I think so. Something like
which
that.
Which is kind of small for a first draft, I think, because that's double spaced.
Yeah, so it would have ended up at 150 single spaced, roughly.
So now I'm, what'd you say, 145?
I would, 300 would have ended up as, I think, 150 single spaced.
No, not where I am now.
Oh, where you're at now? At 145?
Yeah, I've added quite a bit to this.
You've added quite a bit, yeah. You'll be definitely more than 300 now.
All right, I'm thinking I'm going to make Joshua more of an asshole.
Ooh.
More like a, you know, because like right now I kind of have it written like he's a stick up for the little guy type of hired gun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of changing that to a, you know, maybe not so much. Maybe he's not, you know, he's not going to be like a full blown, like he's not going to hire, if somebody hires him and they want him to, you know, kill women and children, he's not going to do that. But
yeah,
he'll, you know, he'll shoot somebody like Johnson if he's got to.
Right.
I'm thinking I'm going to move that. So where he gets that, because he thinks he knows who Johnson is, so he has that cable. I'm thinking about putting that much sooner. And then when he gets that cable that's got all of Johnston's like military information in it, he's like, oh, fuck. This is the guy who, you know, saved my brother's life during the war. So I got to figure out how to do this job without killing him.
You think about moving toward anti-hero with Joshua?
Well, no, I don't think he could be an anti-hero.
Because he's a hired gun?
Yeah, he'd have to actually be fighting the actual bad guy, cold-blooded way. I don't think he's quite anti. He's indifferent hero.
Indifferent hero. Okay. He's the highest bidder hero.
Yeah. Or first, like let's say the Nestors hired him. You know, like the Magnificent Seven. They offered him $2 and some tacos, right, to go down there and help fight that guy. So if the Nestors would have hired him first and then Brody came in and said, hey, I'll give you $500 to fight for me, he's going to honor the contract. He's going to be like, yeah, that sounds great, but, you know, I already ate these tacos, so I'm committed.
Yeah.
He's that type of guy.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's see how this rolls with him then. I'm interested.
All right. You probably won't see more of that until the third draft, but.
Hey, that's all right.
Because I'm already well past that now, I think.
Yeah, it gives some time to kind of figure out, you know, what you want to do with it. At least moving in that direction anyway.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to say time to wrap this up.
Yep. Wrap it up, B.
Where do people need to go if they want to find more of our stuff?
They need to go to Patreon and check out Pacific Novel Project and subscribe. So they can see cool stuff and participate in possible writing contests for either photo prompts or, what was it, 300-word writing prompts?
Yep, because we will read writing prompt responses on the podcast.
And want to give prizes, but we need subscribers to give prizes to.
Yeah, so subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe, tell your enemies to subscribe. Tell people you meet on the bus to subscribe. Trust me, I've been on the bus. It'll be the least weird conversation they had. Random dude tell them to subscribe to this podcast.
I know, right? Well, also, I mean, look at BYOB, you know. We have some fun with that, and we need subscribers to have our pre-fun show with before the fun show, you know, because we're supposed to have, like, that little get-together with BYOB subscribers. But we don't have anybody to have it.
That's true. Yeah, we got that one patron, but he's not at the meeting level. The private book club meeting level that's limited to 10 people, I believe. Yes. Join us on Discord, and we'll talk about whatever the book of the month is.
Yeah, we get to, you know, hash shit out. We can talk about books. books.
We are
talk about Z books.
We are also on the Google Play, and we have a website, pacificnovelproject.com, which right now is basically just a hosting site for our podcast, but working on touching it up and putting some more stuff on it.
And we're on iTunes too, aren't we?
No, iTunes is still being a butthead.
Okay, fair enough. Well, who needs Apple?
Yeah, our other podcast, Galactic Nomads, is on iTunes. If you like science fiction role-playing, we've got a traveler podcast, Galactic Nomads, on iTunes. But for some reason, I can't get this one on iTunes.
But yeah, looking forward to the next one. It'll be fun.
All right. So yeah, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project, Pacific Novel Project on the Google Play, or if you like science fiction role play, galacticnomads.com, although you're probably better off going to YouTube, look for the channel Galactic Nomads, and then you'll find cool stuff on there. All right. Good night, Steve-O.
All right. Good night, Jason.
I'm looking forward to coming back to the beautiful Pacific Northwest, even though Denver itself is beautiful. I've had enough.
Oh, hey, we're waiting for you, man. You know, we're in the same place we've always been. So we'll welcome you back.
Thank you. And good night, Steve. Good night, listeners, wherever you may be.
Have a good night.
And remember to ride on.